I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. The U.S. Supreme Court is going to hear a case that comes from Wisconsin. It's a landmark partisan gerrymandering case. And our guest this hour is the named plaintiff in the case. He wrote a recent piece in Time magazine, Why Wisconsin is Not a Democracy. Bill Whitford is a retired professor of law from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And he writes, at a trial in front of three federal judges, two of whom were appointed by a Republican president, evidence was clearly established that Wisconsin has one of the most partisan, perhaps the most partisan, legislative gerrymanders in the nation. As the trial court found, gerrymandering effectively guarantees Republican control of both houses of the Wisconsin legislature for a decade, no matter what happens in Wisconsin elections. We'll talk to Professor Whitford about how he became the named plaintiff and why he believes that we need the Supreme Court to restore fairness in elections by setting some limits on the degree of partisan bias in legislative redistricting. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I know that we've been on this subject before, and many of you have thoughts about gerrymandering in our state. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And Professor Bill Whitford, hello. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. How did you become a named plaintiff, sir?
Well, that requires I explain how the case got started.
It
was after the 2012 elections. There was a small group of people, included me and a few others, who began meeting in a tea house in Milwaukee, the Watts Tea Room.
Oh, sure.
About once a month, basically to discuss what could be done. And zoom through all that, we decided that there was room for bringing a lawsuit, that would try to ask the Supreme Court to finally put some limits on partisan gerrymandering. We knew by then that Wisconsin was a very partisan gerrymander because the Democrats had what was a very good year for Wisconsin Democrats in 2012. Barack Obama won the state handily. Tammy Baldwin beat Tommy Thompson, elected the U.S. Senate. Democrats had a sizable majority of the statewide vote for the state assembly, but got only 39 of the 99 seats under this apportionment. That was the first election under the apportionment. So we pretty much knew, as Democrats, we were doomed for the decade if we didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we began looking around for lawyers who would take the case for nothing, and, I mean, we didn't have to pay them.
Right.
Found some, and I was the one person out of that group who, for a variety of reasons, it made sense to be a plaintiff, and I became one plaintiff. There's 12 altogether, but that's how I became a plaintiff.
And describe our situation in terms of the other states in the country. There are some states that have Democratic gerrymandered districts, but it's my understanding that Wisconsin is the most gerrymandered among all states. Is that right?
Well, it depends on what measure you use for how gerrymandered something is, but by all measures, we're way up there. If we're not the most gerrymandered, we're real close. The evidence we have, there was a lot of expert evidence at the trial with all these political scientists with lots of credentials, and one thing that became very clear is that partisan gerrymander exists. Partisan gerrymanders become bad when a state is under single-party rule. That is to say, the three organs of government that decide on a legislative apportionment, the two houses of the legislature and the governor, are all representatives of the same party. That's when things get bad, and that's true whether that be a Democratic single-party state or a Republican single-party state.
I know there are some states that have nonpartisan districting, California being among them. How come some states have that and we don't?
Well, the states that have it mostly are, like California, Arizona, are the principal examples, are states that have the legislative initiative where citizens can have a process by which petition they can stick on the ballot a constitutional amendment or a legislative plan that has the effect of taking reapportionment, power to reapportion, out of the hands of the legislature, who have an obvious conflict of interest. Only one state in the country has voluntarily has the legislature voluntarily given up the power, at least so far, and that's our neighboring state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Most states, the legislature has the power, and they don't want to give it up.
So this case that the Supreme Court will hear could have huge ramifications for the rest of the country, right?
Well, it'll have ramifications for the rest of the country and how huge they are. It'll produce a bunch of litigation if the plaintiffs are successful. If the plaintiffs are successful in the Supreme Court,
right.
It's not a sure thing.
Right.
But if we are successful, it'll produce a lot of litigation. How big the implications are gets into the remedy phase. That is, suppose the court says the current Wisconsin apportionment is unconstitutional, as the trial court did. There'll have to be a substitute plan, and the legislature will have a large voice in what that plan will be. How much less partisan will the replacement plan be than the current plan? That's not yet determined. So obviously on that issue would depend on how huge the difference will be.
Mm-hmm. And tell me legally about this. So the three federal judges, two of whom you remind us appointed by a Republican president, determined that this was against the Constitution. They ruled in favor of the plaintiffs. Why didn't the Supreme Court just not hear the case and allow that to stand? Does it not bode well for you that they decided to hear the case?
Oh, everybody expected them to hear the case because
they did.
The Supreme Court has not previously approved a challenge that a legislative districting scheme is unconstitutional as excessively partisan. There have been about three cases over the years that have made it to the Supreme Court. In our case, if they had simply not taken the case, then, of course, the trial court decision would have stood, but it would be the first time in history a federal court has struck down a legislative districting scheme as unconstitutionally partisan. And we didn't expect the Supreme Court would do that without reviewing the case.
I see.
As a whole.
I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Well, so I don't take any significance to the fact that they took the case. We all expected that. Both sides actually expected it.
I see. You write in the Time article about the consequences of what you deem to be unfair redistricting. What are they?
Well, I mentioned in there my op-ed two kind of categories. Of course, we have a legislature that is not only controlled entirely by Republicans, but they don't really have to fear that the future legislature, they don't fear future elections as far as whether they're going to put Democrats in control. So what we get is some very, very partisan legislation. In fact, for most members of the state assembly, the election they have to fear is a partisan primary, not the general election. There are very few competitive seats in this apportionment, party competitive. And, of course, I'm sure you've had many shows on all the partisan legislation that has come down since the 2010 election. There's all the stuff on unions, Act 10, and right to work. There's the very substantial cuts to education. There's the school vouchers, which are plans, which are they're very aggressive voter ID laws. In the news lately are these approvals, almost establishing a property right and having high capacity wells by large industrial users that are undercutting lakes, trout streams, wetlands, and the like. I just mentioned. So there's that whole category. The second one is, and here is a partisan Democrat. I've been a partisan Democrat my whole life, and I have to confess that's quite a while. I'm 77. We are discouraged. I mean, I've worked on statewide legislative elections since I was a teenager. But, you know, it's hard to maintain your enthusiasm when there are very few competitive seats, and in any event, you'll never get a Democratic majority in the assembly. So it kind of chills is a term that lawyers sometimes use participation in elections mm-hmm. on the Democratic side.
Yeah. So has there been a time in recent Wisconsin history when the Democrats were in control and did something similar? Or is this really bad behavior?
No, in Wisconsin itself, because we're a purple state, we don't often have single-party control.
Right.
And particularly in the years in which an apportionment is decided. Under the Constitution, you know, there has to be a new apportionment after each census. So the key years are the years that end in 1, 71, 81, 91, 2001, 2011. Well, 71, 81, 91, 2001, we had divided party control. Mm. Courts, in 71, there was actually a bipartisan agreement negotiated to Democratic and Republican leaders on the legislative apportionment. 81, 91, 2001, courts played either an exclusive or very heavy role in establishing the apportionment. 2011 was the first time in 50 years where you had one party deciding everything, and you see the results.
We are going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is @KDunnShow. It really historically seems like this is a very big deal. It's my understanding, Bill, that the Supreme Court has looked at racial aspects of redistricting, but not looking at partisan gerrymandering. And it's been going on in this country since the inception of the country, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, the legal history, though, is this. I mean, the court has looked at partisan gerrymandering cases, and, well, I'll say three times, although two principal times, once 1986, if I remember right, and 2004. But in neither case did they sustain the view. It was a divided vote, and in 2004, Kennedy was kind of the swing vote, and we can talk more in detail about that. But what the court has never done is to held that an apportionment could be unconstitutional because it's excessively partisan. They routinely throw out legislative apportionments as being racially discriminatory. That's routine.
Let's go to phone calls. We have a full bank of people who want to talk to you. Muhammad in Madison, our first caller. Hi, Muhammad.
Hi, Kathleen. I was first introduced to the term gerrymandering in the speeches of Malcolm X Little in the 60s as he described the unfair advantage that southern and northern states created when African Americans won the right to vote. When you look at Wisconsin and the geography of African Americans in Milwaukee, Dane, Racine counties, concentrated areas that get a few African Americans elected, but when it comes to legislation policy, we get killed. And it makes the, since 2010, it makes the Democrats statewide and nationally look impotent in their challenge to Republicans, especially, you know, when you look at the five recent special races that took place when people were placed in the Trump administration and then ran against Democrats for office. We just got smoked, or they got smoked. I consider myself independent, but I wonder if your guests could speak to the racial implications of this court case and the recent gerrymandering that's taken place.
Should I go ahead?
Go right ahead, sir.
Well, the racial aspect is complicated because under the Voting Rights Act of 1965, states are obligated by federal law, this is not constitutional law, but statutory law, to provide an opportunity for a minority, we'll take African-Americans, to elect a person of their choice when possible. So this creates some of the black majority districts to which Muhammad speaks. But there's a whole legion of cases, including ones that were decided this year by the Supreme Court, where essentially the legislature, maybe using the Voting Rights Act provision as an excuse, puts more minorities into what we call a PAC district precisely to keep them from influencing the vote in a neighboring district. And this is just part of the partisan gerrymandering we're talking about. But there's a long history of that. and the Supreme Court has attempted to police it. It's a difficult thing to do, but the doctrine is very clear. In fact, in our case, we're kind of borrowing on that precedent, but substituting discrimination on the basis of partisan identity for discrimination on the basis of racial identity. But otherwise, the legal test we propose is very similar to the racial gerrymandering cases.
Thanks, Mohammed, very much for your call. Let's go to Mark next in Mineral Point. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. I have kind of a two-part question. One is, I'm wondering if the gerrymandering that we're seeing in many states throughout the country, if this gerrymandering is based in large part on a model or some models provided by ALEC or some similar organization. And I guess the second part of the question is, in the case of Wisconsin, it was widely reported that they had some very high-priced attorneys with, I guess, very specialized software to work on the maps and to get exactly the maximum benefit, partisan benefit for the Republicans, you know, that they could. And just as an afterthought, you know, I understand that as high-priced lawyers are paid for by our tax dollars.
Okay, well, you're kind of pointing in the right direction, Mark, but you're just a little off. I don't think ALEC had a whole lot to do with it, but there was another program managed by the Republican National Committee called Red Map, which was designed to post-elect Republicans in the key election 2010 in a variety of purple states, including Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, et cetera. And all those states ended up with single-party Republican control. That program called Red Map has been written about quite frequently, particularly by a journalist and author named Dave Daly. And you can Google it and look it up. But as to the actual drafting of plans, that's done state by state. The key drafters in Wisconsin, this all became clear in trial, were three legislative aides, also, of course, paid by the taxpayers, and they used a fancy computer program that is available for purchase. The one they used is called Autobound. Hmm. Where the lawyers came in were this. Anybody drafting an apportionment these days does need legal advice, because there are some constitutional requirements, particularly the racial gerrymandering and the Voting Rights Act that we just discussed, but there are others. But what the Republicans did in 2011 is they had those legislative aides temporarily resign their positions of the state and become employees of a law firm, Michael Best and Friedrich, working under the tutelage of a lawyer, a partner in Michael Best and Friedrich, and they did their work in a room in the Michael Best and Friedrich offices, which are, those of you who know Madison, are located in the Glass Bank just across the street from the Capitol, and they were considered employees of the law firm and working for a lawyer. The purpose of all that was to keep it as confidential as possible, and I'll just keep it short without going through all that, but certainly one of the things that happened in our case is that the courts basically blew through all that effort to create the aides work, to have their aides work be viewed as lawyer work product and not available for examination, said no, it was drafts of public legislation, the apportionment, the legislative apportionment, and we ended up with complete access to all their work, much of which was talked about in trial. Hmm. The key witnesses in trial were those legislative aides, not the lawyers.
Hmm. Bill Whitford is our guest this hour. He's a named plaintiff in Wisconsin's gerrymandering case that the Supreme Court will be hearing in the fall. Professor of Law Emeritus at UW-Madison. He joined the faculty in 1965 to teach business law, also taught for several years in East Africa, and is a Wisconsin native. We'll welcome more phone calls as well. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network. And we continue now with Bill Whitford, named plaintiff in Wisconsin's gerrymandering case. The New York Times article, Bill, about this case says the fate is very likely to turn on the vote of Justice Kennedy. In 2004, Kennedy wrote in a concurring opinion on a gerrymandering case that he might consider a challenge if there were a, quote, workable standard to decide when such tactics crossed a constitutional line. But he said that he had not seen such a standard. So do you have such a standard?
Well, we proposed such a standard in our presentation of the case called the efficiency gap, and we can get into that. But what the court actually held, the trial court, there are several competing standards for measuring basically how partisan a gerrymander is, that Wisconsin's basically flunks whatever the standard is so far over the line that you don't have to really pick one of these tests. Wisconsin not only is very partisan, but the plaintiffs were able to show that, and this was a key part of the trial court opinion, it was durable, to use their terms. That is to say, it would continue to be very partisan, Republican, predictably, throughout the decade. And note the significance of that. That means that there would be a very partisan, very favorable Republican apportionment in 2020. The legislature elected in 2020 will decide the next apportionment.
Let's go next to Peter in Baraboo. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking the call again. And thank you, Professor, for the work that you're doing. As a Sauk County supervisor and former Baraboo school board member, we have been very active in fighting the gerrymandering which has been going on, which has controlled our state legislature for much too long, and which has had serious impact on public education and, of course, our county services as well. There is no question that in Wisconsin, the letter of the law and the spirit of the law has been broken, and I am thankful for the professor's work, and hopefully the Supreme Court will do its due diligence and its job to bring Wisconsin and other states back into a more democratic fold so that we can elect the representatives we wish rather than have the representatives choose us. Thank you again.
Thank you, Peter. Professor Whitford.
Well, I mean, pretty much agree with everything he says. I know that Peter lives up there in a packed district, an excellent example of how they gerrymander by putting the Democrats in highly Democratic districts. Those are the packed districts. And then the remaining Democrats, they can't pack, they crack them. They'd be sure they're not more than 40-45% in other districts. And Peter, much of Sauk County is in a packed district.
Hmm. Peggy from La Crosse, we have some emails coming in, too, wonders if the 2020 census will have a cut in funding and how will that affect redistricting?
I know nothing about that. I don't have an opinion. I just have to plead ignorance.
That's fine. Rarely do guests do that. It's very refreshing. It's great. Joe wonders, is there a simple way to look at the population and create the districts from there? How did it get so darn complicated?
Well, there are people who are trying to develop formulas. Mathematicians are a big part of them, to redistrict untouched by human hands, just using geography and the idea that districts should be contiguous, that is to say, not separated by physical land. You can't have you have to be able to travel from one end to the other district to the other without leaving it, and have equal population. And, you know, it's possible to get computers to do it. No state does it that way because there are some judgment factors that most people think should go into redistricting. And one of them that I personally feel is not a part of the case as such, but it certainly is a consequence of the apportionment that we're attacking. I believe that in purple states like Wisconsin, there should be many swing districts, districts that are party competitive, that this keeps the parties and the legislatures honest. and it makes the general election and not just the partisan primaries important elections. Now, you can structure an apportionment to maximize party competitive seats. I mean, in this one, the effort was to more or less minimize that very successfully. And some computer-driven one could accidentally create districts that may lead to kind of a fair assignment of seats in the legislature by, according to the statewide party vote, but without swing districts, and I think that would be less desirable.
Mm-hmm. And, Bill, who would you ideally like to see fashion the districts? Would it be a court? Who would do it?
Well, I personally, but again, it's not part of the case, and not all the 12 plaintiffs would necessarily agree.
Right.
I personally would favor some kind of a commission system where you have to be careful to appoint the commissioners in as nonpartisan a way as possible, and that can fail, I know. But on balance, I think the commissioners are likely to do a better job than legislators.
Mm-hmm.
But most countries do it that way, by the way. America is unusual in leaving it to the legislature to reapportion themselves. But I would emphasize the importance of having some kind of standard that we hope the Supreme Court will address in our case that sets limits on the degree of partisan unfairness of apportionment, whether done by a commission or a legislature, because you can have commissions that go off in a bad way.
Mm-hmm. Will you get to speak before the Supreme Court?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I'm a retired law professor.
I know.
But we have a fancy lawyer in Washington who's very experienced in Supreme Court argument, who will do the argument on our behalf. His name is Paul Smith. He's very experienced. He's volunteered his time, and we're glad to have his services. I've never argued in the Supreme Court and don't expect I ever will.
Pat in Three Lakes. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm kind of interested listening to this about the gerrymandering and the voter idea. You haven't brought that up yet. But anyway, I'm a conservative Republican. I voted for Barry Goldwater. And over the years, I'm still a conservative Republican, but the party's left me. The party has left me a long time ago. And now we have a president of the United States that is an absolute fraud that called my favorite American, John McCain, almost a coward, and said he wasn't a hero, said he was nothing almost. And not one Republican stood up for him. And it's a shame. Also, what the Republican Party has done to democracy in the state of Wisconsin by gerrymandering and voter ID, it's destroying democracy. The greatest party in the history of the United States has turned into a bunch of, well, whatever. Anyway, that's my speech.
Thank you. Thanks for your call. Bill.
Well, I just say that a number of Republicans are supporting our cause, and we welcome them. I'll just drop a couple names. Dale Schultz, who was a 30 years Republican state senator from southwestern Wisconsin, once Republican legislative leader in the state Senate, is very much very vocal in support of our cause. And on the national level, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the former Republican governor of California, is very much in favor of redistricting reform. And participating in national efforts to try to reform the process. There's again, obviously, increasing interest, bipartisan interest around the country in addressing the method by which America redistricts itself.
Yeah, it's going to be a big case. The title of the Time article is Why Wisconsin is Not a Democracy. Is that what you believe, it's not a democracy?
Well, it's not a democracy when it comes to the state legislature. It is a democracy when it comes to statewide elections or a whole variety of other elections. But what's happened in the state legislature, I've lived a long time, Kathleen, I'm 77, and this has changed a bit over the many years that I've been politically conscious, not quite all 77 years, but since I was 13 or 14. What's happened is that the caucus system in the state legislatures have become so much stronger. so much, they become so strong that obviously the most important thing you know about any individual legislator is their party. And it's extremely difficult for a member of the Republican Party, and probably the Democratic Party for that matter, to buck the caucus and join some kind of what we call bipartisan coalition, because they'll just get primaried in the next election. We just saw it recently, what happened when nationally when Dean Heller announced he wasn't going to support this Health Care Act, and immediately key members of the Republican Party are threatening, are going to run ads against him in Nevada. So that has made the question of the party balance in the legislature key to public policy, and we're not a democracy in the sense that Democrats can get, as they did in 2012, about 52% of the statewide vote for the assembly, but only 39% of the seats. I mean, because the party identity is key to forming public policy. That's what I mean when I say we're not a democracy. We're not a democracy in the legislature.
Hmm. Pat, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Paul in Tomahawk. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, you know, given what the Supreme Court has done with Citizens United, do you really think that they're going to uphold a small D Democratic move and uphold this lawsuit?
Well, I think we have a good chance, let me put it that way, but that's based on the analysis of Justice Kennedy's decisions. I have no doubt that it will be a divided vote. I can almost guarantee three justices will vote against us. But if you look at Kennedy's previous opinions in the earlier cases that I mentioned, we've tried to address his concerns, and I think we have done a pretty good job. Citizens United is a little bit different because lawyers all know that Justice Kennedy has what some of us would regard extreme views about the First Amendment, and that's what Citizens United turned on. So I don't think you can assume because of Citizens United that Kennedy won't join us in this case. I hope he will.
I'm wondering, the article mentions how people may have become politically disaffected because of the issue, in part because of gerrymandering, in big part perhaps. You write about, as a boy, you were working with your mother on a campaign to recall Senator Joseph McCarthy in the 1950s, and you worked on many campaigns in many districts over the years. Are you still, or are you disillusioned as well?
Well, I am, but not with the same zest and maybe not with the same degree of vigor as I did. I mean, I worked very hard in 2012, but I'll have to confess I think my efforts slacked off a little bit in 2014 and 2016, and I'm embarrassed about that. But I will say this to the Democrats around the state, and I'm a proud, longtime Democrat. There's no solution but to continue to work. And I certainly worked very hard in statewide elections and so forth. It's just me participating in trying to elect a Democrat from some district, not my own, around the state, because we think we might have a chance. There just aren't very many seats like that. And even if we won a few, you know, we wouldn't get a majority in the assembly that it was demonstrated at trial. It's essentially impossible under this districting.
Bob in Stevens Point, hi.
I'm confused by numbers. After the last national elections, the last several of them, all we hear is that the Republicans are sweeping a lot of states. That means state governments.
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't we right now having a whole bunch of Republican states all crying before the Supreme Court, making a case that it's gerrymandering? And by the way, would you say Senator Lassa was gerrymandered out and that's why she lost?
No, I wouldn't say that about Senator Lassa's district, no. You know, she won fine in 2012 and 14. She got swept under because of a Trump wave up there that can happen even in competitive seats. So, no, I wouldn't say that's an example. Although there are many examples throughout the state of Wisconsin I could give you. I'm not sure I understood the first part of your question. I do expect, because there's so many Republican controlled, 100% controlled states, that the Republican National Committee will file an amicus brief in the Supreme Court in opposition to us. There are many estimates. One of them came down today by political science experts about the extent to which gerrymandering of congressional districts around the country account for the substantial Republican majority in the House, Federal House of Representatives. I think the political science experts pretty much agree that gerrymandering accounts, if not for 100% of the Republican advantage in the House of Representatives, most of it.
Let's go to Mary next in Rhinelander. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm wondering, if the court finds that an election is unconstitutional, why do the people get to stay in office? Why don't they redo the vote? And why hasn't anybody proposed legislation to require something like that?
Well, the second part I couldn't really answer, but there's a problem of necessity. You sort of need a legislature in order to pass laws. And redistricting schemes have been held unconstitutional since the 1960s at various points, either because they're not equal, the districts are not equal population, or the racial gerrymandering cases. So we have some precedent on remedy, and it establishes laws passed by this legislature remain valid even though elected under an unconstitutional districting scheme. And they even give that same unconstitutional legislature the right to propose a substitute plan that hopefully is constitutional, an exclusive right to propose the first alternative, and then it goes to the court to examine whether they fix the problem. We'll have a chance to opine on that issue, but that's the way it'll happen. If we were to win in the Supreme Court, the next step will be for the legislature to propose a substitute plan, and then it'll go to the trial court, and we'll get a chance to complain about what they've done if we don't like it.
And weren't they already working on a different plan because you had the lower court rule that they needed to? Or did they not do anything until the Supreme Court?
I don't think there were. If they're working on it, it was very secret, and I don't know anything about it. They were under an order from the lower court to produce a substitute plan by November 1st.
Oh,
the idea of that was that we would then have a chance to object, and then if the Supreme Court did affirm our case, there'd be a substitute plan all ready to go. And it was had to do with the timing of the 2018 election cycle. The Supreme Court has stayed and joined and stopped that process. So I don't know that they started working on one.
I see.
It's not public that they did.
And Professor Whitford, I was wondering, what would it take for Wisconsin to have a voter initiative?
Well, we don't have voter initiative in our Constitution. We'd have to amend the Constitution.
I see.
I mean, the legislature would have to pass it two different sessions of legislature, and then it has to be passed by a statewide referendum.
Mary, thanks very much for your call. Mitch in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Mitch.
I would like to see them enforce the existing laws that they have, especially Act 10, and require that for all the elections that they would have to count everybody that's eligible according to the Constitution, and they would make the count that way, where now we have excluded people through registrations, through IDs and other forms, and we are now running around between 12 to really big elections, 30% of the eligible voters. And this way, all the other voters that stayed home would be counted, and they would be counted as a no vote against anybody that's running.
Bill.
Well, Wisconsin, United States in general has one of the lowest turnouts amongst modern democracies, and it's frequently observed. The United States does a lot less to encourage voting and a lot more to discourage voting than most democracies. And the obvious example is holding elections on Tuesdays instead of weekends, which is generally more convenient for working people to vote. The voter registration systems are not voter friendly, and now we have voter ID and so forth. So I share all your concerns about turnout. I don't know that I would agree with your proposal that people who don't turn out should be just deemed as voting no. It could lead to a situation. Well, I'm not sure what that would mean, because usually in Wisconsin, in a legislative district, the person with the most votes, even if it's less than a majority, gets elected to the legislature. I'm not sure how the no votes would figure into something like that.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking this hour of the program with Professor Bill Whitford. He's the named plaintiff in Wisconsin's gerrymandering case, which will be heard this fall by the U.S. Supreme Court. He is retired law professor of law emeritus at UW-Madison, and we're talking about he's a proud Democrat and is concerned about how Republicans have gerrymandered the state of Wisconsin in a big way. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network. Jackie is our next caller. Excuse me, Jackie in Slinger. Hi.
Hi. My question is, my understanding of the suit is it's based upon vote wasting, and I also understand the Supreme Court has decided in the case in Gore versus Bush or whatever the exact title of that lawsuit was, that there is no fundamental right to vote. So I'm wondering how the fact that we don't have a fundamental right to vote impacts on the fact that our vote is being wasted, and won't it require a constitutional amendment to guarantee the right to vote for this really to have much progress within the Supreme Court?
Well, I don't think it would require a constitutional amendment, of course. A constitutional amendment would be one way to address the problem of partisan gerrymandering. But what we've tried to do is to construct a legal standard that borrows very closely on the racial gerrymandering cases, for which there's lots of precedent. The racial gerrymandering cases require the plaintiffs to show that there was an intent to discriminate on the basis of race, that intent was successful, that is to say that in practice the districting scheme discriminates on the basis of race, and third, that there's no justification for the districting scheme that's not racially based on the need to have equal population, contiguous districts, and so forth. So our test is parallels what we suggest and what the trial court found in our favor on up. They agreed with our legal view. An intent to discriminate on the basis of partisan identity as opposed to race, and we showed that very clearly. We could go into that data, but I don't think that will really be contested. It was contested at trial by the state, and will be contested in Supreme Court. The second test is that it does, in fact, discriminate on the basis of partisan identity, and that's our evidence that we, from political scientists, that we have one of the most partisan gerrymanders ever. And the third test is whether or not the state can justify it as necessary to comply with certain traditional districting criteria, like that districts be contiguous and compact. The state put much of their emphasis on the third criteria at the trial. They argued that there's a kind of natural gerrymander in Wisconsin because Democrats have clustered themselves into the inner city of Milwaukee and the inner city of Madison. And so there's some naturally packed districts. And the trial court found there was a slight tendency by that, but not enough to explain the extent of the gerrymandering. And we pointed out that while Democrats are indeed clustered in the inner city of Milwaukee and the inner city of Madison, they're also very clustered in the so-called Red Belt counties around Milwaukee, almost Washington County, and so forth. They're almost equally packed Republican areas.
Mm-hmm. What do you anticipate? I'm sure you've thought about this. Professor Whitford, what do you anticipate will be the strongest argument from the other side?
The strongest argument, in my opinion, will be that this area is so partisan and political and difficult to draw a line between an excessively partisan and just a little bit partisan district, that it's best the Supreme Court just not wade into it. It will be hard for the Supreme Court to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. In any event, it'll get the Supreme Court wrapped up in a highly partisan matter that will ultimately undercut some of the respect that people have for the Supreme Court. That will be the argument.
Terry in Green Bay, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm glad that the Supreme Court is taking up this political gerrymandering case. But despite any decision that comes from the judges at all of this, is that we can still take politicians out of the process of drawing maps. And there is legislation right now, SB 13 and AB 44, that has been introduced to take politicians out, and is very much based on the Iowa model that's been in place for decades. And we need to all get behind this to get politicians out of there, because they should not be drawing lines to pick their own voters. We pick theirs.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I know that legislation has been endorsed by a number of county boards around the state, and I want to give a shout-out to a farmer supervisor in Lincoln County named Hans Breitenmoser, who's been very much behind this effort to get county boards, and a number of them now endorsed it by a very large majorities, but, you know, I'm not going to wait for this Republican legislature to voluntarily give up their power to impose another partisan gerrymandering on us in 2021, which they think they'll be able to do. I'm all for your efforts. I just think that it would be helpful if the Supreme Court bailed us out of this problem, or have bailed us at least out of the worst of it. That's why I suggest in the Time article that the Supreme Court is really the only remedy to restore legislative democracy in Wisconsin, because I just don't see the legislature voluntarily passing these bills.
Mm-hmm. Terry, thanks. Peter in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask Professor Whitford kind of a follow-up to an earlier question, which I don't think we hit on very well, which is, why aren't there Republican, across the country, Republicans have swept legislatures because of gerrymandering in many, many states. And the question is, why aren't there a plethora of or a large number of similar suits coming from other states?
Well, there are some suits, but I think a lot of them are just kind of waiting to see what the Supreme Court does in the Wisconsin case. And if plaintiffs were to be successful, you'll see a lot of suits, and a number of them against Democratic gerrymanders in states. There's one proceeding is in trial right now involving the Maryland congressional districts. But I think it's a big effort to bring one of these cases. You have to hire experts, and experts have to be paid, and lawyers have to devote untold amount of time, which mm-hmm. is largely unpaid. So I think a lot of people are just waiting to see what Supreme Court does in our case.
And one more call. We have about a minute left. Jeff in Madison, hi.
Hi. Let's suppose the Supreme Court rules the way your guests would like, which is the way I would like as well. Who then redraws the lines? Is it the same old people? And I'll listen off to you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Maybe. I mean, the legislature is pretty clear. The legislature will get the first chance at redrawing the lines, but it'll have to be vetted. It'll have to be approved by the court. And it'll have to be approved to the court as not excessively partisan. And if the second effort is deemed by the trial court as excessively partisan, that court could, it's in its discretion, open it up for other people to suggest plans, or they could assign it the problem of drafting a districting scheme to what we call a master. It would be kind of a nonpartisan expert. That's happened in some other cases in equal population or racial gerrymandering cases.
Thanks, Jeff. Good question, and a good question on which to end the show. Professor Bill Whitford, thank you very much for being with us. It was a fascinating hour. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Bill Whitford, named plaintiff in Wisconsin's gerrymandering case, professor of law emeritus at UW-Madison, and he wrote a piece that caught our attention in Time magazine that is titled, Why Wisconsin is Not a Democracy. Thanks to Gretchen Brown for producing this hour, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in Milwaukee. News is coming up, and we invite you to join us tomorrow. Hour one of our show tomorrow, we'll be talking about the phrase radical Islamic terrorism. Our guest from The Nation and the Center for Investigative Reporting says that most domestic terrorism is coming from far-right extremists. That tomorrow at 1:00.